Hello. That was me just finishing off my huge mug of coffee. So that's where we're at today. Oh, here's my microphone. I'm using my microphone. the sound, I don't know. Hello, welcome along to the Watch Along Suspicion Edition episode 3. Here we are in the kitchen again. This, my new clock I'm going to be putting up because I've got a power tool now. So, you know, maybe next time you'll get to see that on the wall, I don't know. I am caffeinated to the max, so it's time to quickly dress a little bit more appropriately. Yes, still figuring out if I'm looking the right direction. This, eagle-eyed viewers will be aware that this is actually not the dress I wore in episode 3 of Suspicion, but I wore it today for Claire, who's on the show, costume designer, because this was kind of Tara's OG outfit and dress, and I'm assuming she comes to life in future episodes, but I just had to wear it for Claire. Also from Zara, this dress. The other one was from Zara also. We'll talk about that perhaps in this episode. Thank you for being here. So welcome to episode 3 of the Watch Along Suspicion. Welcome to the Watch Along episode 3. Suspicion edition episode 3. Oh my gosh, we'll get there in the end. Hey, here's the tagline for this episode. The suspects return home and attempt to patch their lives together. A surprising connection is revealed. Right. Oh my gosh, we just have the most amazing people. Sorry, we'll not sing. We have the most incredible people on today, as we do every week, but just so wonderful today. So we've got Lucy Kane, who did the hair and makeup on Suspicion. She's also worked as the head of department of hair and makeup on Killing Eve, on Criminal, which is where she first worked with Kunal, also on the show Us with little amazing actor that some of you may know called Ian de Castica, was on that show. So I had such a lovely connection with Lucy already because I knew that she'd worked with Ian and Ian absolutely loved her. And so it just felt like it was all magical and meant to be. We also have Claire Finley Thompson, who was the costume designer on Suspicion. She has also done Industry, Time Wasters, The League of Gentlemen, hello! And it's just absolutely incredible. I wanted to have Claire and Lucy on for just so many reasons. I mean, the first being they're both absolutely brilliant and magical and I just love them both so much. They're leaders in their field. And, you know, the relationship between an actor and hair and makeup and the costume department is a really special one. And sometimes you can feel kind of vulnerable when you're going into those fittings and those initial kind of test meetings and things. And you form this really lovely bond when everything is perfect and works. And it did in this show. They just have such a huge part in my heart. Yeah, that makes sense. And I was just so, so grateful to them for coming on today and sharing their wisdom and their journey to the show, perhaps, and kind of their approach. And we've got so many amazing questions, so thank you so much for those. We'll try and get to some of those at the end. This episode was directed by Stefan Schwartz and written by Terry Cafola and is brilliant. So without further ado, welcome to the Watch Along Suspicion Edition episode 3. See you in the Zoom. Well, welcome, Lucy Kane and Claire Finley-Thompson. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So today we're going to watch episode 3 of Suspicion. I have mine sort of, what do you call it? Brilliant, what a good start. Queued up. But yeah. I'm at the Apple emblem has just come on.
You want to skip recap?
Yeah, let's skip the recap. Okay, perfect. Yeah. So right. 3, 2, 1, play.
Play.
Oh, wait, no, I can hear it. Can you mute it? Maybe we mute it. Let's mute it.
I'm going to put it on subtitles.
Perfect. Subtitles. Great. And Lucy, did you press record on your voice thingy? Because I only just remembered.
Yes. Got 5 minutes worth already. 5 minutes, 8 seconds worth already.
riveting.
Giving us gold. I love it. Oh my gosh, perfect. Well, here we are. So, you know, we can stick to what's happening on the episode, but then we can also, you know, I have a million questions to ask both of you, because obviously such huge fans of both. So if anything's happening on the episode that you want to, like, jump out of the conversation and point out, then please do, because, you know, that's why we're here. As a first question, so obviously Uma Thurman is on screen right now, and we're seeing her kind of prepare herself to then go and face the crowds and face the press potentially. Looking at her, she is clearly just stunning and beautiful just naturally, and I have seen her in real life, so I know. But something I love about the show is how real people look, and kind of when they're meant to look natural, they do look natural rather than looking natural but with false eyelashes on or something. Can you just talk a little bit about how it was that a conscious decision, and how do you, like, is that a tricky balance between making people look real but then also it being an Apple TV Plus TV show?
For me, I think maybe that's where the UK-American thing comes together, because I think maybe naturally in the UK we do a lot of those gritty dramas that really are very raw, so people are quite open sometimes to being very stripped back if it helps to tell the story, and I think we're used to that here. So I'm sure maybe I think it's, you have to see it all together to appreciate, maybe because we're set in the UK as well for the bulk of it, I think it probably worked quite well. But I think it would always be my natural instinct to go that way anyway. Yes, even with like Uma's character, I think it was always like Claire and I's intention, wouldn't you say, Claire, that she would be this powerful person, but I don't think powerful necessarily means you have to really have a really short haircut and you have to be really heavily made up. I think maybe it's more, I felt her character was more disarming if she had a more genteel look, you know, because she's a very striking woman, but I don't think she needed to look hard to be strong, you know. I think that I felt that it was more disarming that she looked gentler and more beautiful, you know, and she had that very long hair. But people were always really receptive to being, you know, if they had to be stripped back, being stripped back.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, it felt much more, you know, I've done different types of shows, I guess, but I loved you know, I couldn't really feel my makeup on my face, you know, like it was all felt very gentle and you know, we obviously knew that everybody, you guys were watching the monitors as we were on screen. So if something did need adding, then there's that trust there of going, oh, well, you know, nobody's going to make me look bad, but equally you want to look real.
You still need to look attractive. It's part and parcel, isn't it, of that, you know. And also you can get a really good effect without piling makeup on, you know. It's like getting the best results with the least amount of product. But I remember, like, for instance, you saying to me, Elizabeth, oh, our makeup call's really, you know, we had to sort of pad our makeup call out with a bit of chat sometimes a lot of the time, because it wasn't always about that huge amount of products.
Yeah, well, and that takes so much confidence, I think, as well, because I don't know, there's a feeling that I think I would have if I was in hair and makeup of like, oh my gosh, I want to really make it about the makeup, or I want to make it about the hair rather than the collective, you know, just kind of look of the character. Claire, how did you approach Catherine Newman, Uma's character?
Well, obviously we're dressing someone who was a model, and she'd look amazing in like a bag, like a plastic bag. But I mean, I wanted her to just look, because obviously she's very tall and gorgeous, but I wanted her to look powerful without doing that full power suit, you know, in red, purple, blue, you know. So we did that kind of, we did the sort of strip back colours, and we cut everything, we made all of her stuff and we made it to fit her, just a shape that really suits her. So we did the same cut in the trousers in different fabrics and the same cut in the blouse in different blouses. And then obviously we added some like luxurious kind of cashmere, because obviously she's like a really rich person, so she could afford anything.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just did like use luxurious fabrics, which was quite nice and made it quite tactile again to make her more disarming and soft and that kind of not a kind of bitch, basically, because it'd be too easy to make her vampy and bitch.
Well, and that's just so I can't think of the word, but just like, it's clearly you guys have both done huge shows and for many years, and it just is, it's so lovely to see Catherine Newman on this and look like a real person, and you didn't just go, oh, well, the script says strong, so I'm going to do, you know, it's like, you know, women, it's like you knew her character, and you, it was kind of a, I don't know, like the less obvious choice of going, well, no, she doesn't need, she already exudes the power, so she's not trying, she just is. And that's a really, like, you can't put your finger on that necessarily. Like, I wouldn't know necessarily how to do it, but clearly you do, and it's just like a feeling you get when she's on screen.
Yeah.
Well, so she's a naturally powerful person, and she's got an amazing presence anyway, just in everyday life.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Uma had a, you know, when we, I'm sure the same with you, Claire, when I first met her over Zoom, you know, it's not just, it's a, you know, it's a collaborative approach. Yeah. You know, you sort of tentatively go in with
you, me and her, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you get a vibe of where she's coming from, and you realise, like, pretty soon off as you meet, that we're kind of actually, all, we've got the same approach.
Yeah. That's so wonderful, isn't it? And then that's a really vulnerable place as well as an actor sometimes to be building a character together, and you kind of just take trust falls with hair and makeup and costume, and you just all find it together, don't you?
Well, and also we hadn't met, you know, like I didn't meet, you know, we all met on Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I did my first fitting with her via Zoom.
Yeah,
that's another thing. We mixed colours for the wig over Zoom. I had to send like 24 samples of hair. And we were doing that. So it, you know, now you're like, it's like, oh, okay, you can do that. But at the time, it was such a new thing. I'd never done that before.
Oh my gosh,
and,
yeah, the first
you know,
time.
They arrive at, you're just hoping it's going to like it.
Yeah.
The wig's going to fit. You know, one of those things, you're a bit like, oh.
Yeah, and you just got to go for it.
Yeah.
We tried so many different sort of big designer clothes and stuff on her, which would be like the kind of obvious route, but we ended up just making everything because she actually prefers stuff being made for her. Obviously, because she's so tall, it just fits her really well. And I think to make her not look so tall is to kind of make things fit really well, you know, that's the kind of, like, that's the kind of way around it.
Yeah, and how wonderful to be able to have all those resources and just go, okay, well, you know, because there must be some... So on the other end of that spectrum is the suspects. And now we've got Adesh and his family on screen, and we just saw Natalie and Monique on screen. So you've got the kind of... One end of the spectrum is Catherine Newman and... that kind of world in New York, and then we have the suspects in England. When you're saying, you know, so all her stuff was kind of bespoke and cashmere and, you know, beautifully made. And then how did you then approach, was that a very conscious decision to go? Because I don't know if you've noticed, but for people watching this on YouTube, I do have this dress I wore especially for you, Claire, because I think I wore this for about 5 months straight. But this is from Zara, and so obviously that's very different than bespoke. How did you approach that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really important, I think, to not go shopping out of your kind of the remit that the people can afford, because I just think it's not really I just don't think it's believable. So for your character, it is Zara's like your most bougie kind of bit. We'd do bits from ASOS, we, you know, Zara, obviously we were doing everything shopping online, bits sometimes one day we got the shops open for us, but it's like, you know, it's kind of, there was no, we're doing it all in a pandemic. So it's shopping with places where people could actually afford and look at what they're earning and look at their, you know, their capabilities of what they've got to spend on clothes and how much they care about it, rather than just, you know, putting luxe labels on everyone because it's, you know, because it's nice to do that, or you can afford to do that with your budget. But I think it's much better, more characterful to use youth stuff, definitely, and older stuff.
Yeah, and it look, you can just tell on screen, it doesn't look like a, you know, filtered to Hollywoody version of it.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you created these different worlds in terms of, like, what were you thinking at Oxford to, because we were actually in Oxford, but...
Yeah, it was so nice though. So I used a lot of those kind of Cotswolds colours and sort of, you know, earthy tones, and that to kind of represent, you know, you kind of like the Oxford places. And then like London, it was a bit more sort of like harder colours and a bit more cooler, I suppose. This is a bit more sort of traditional.
Yeah, lots of layering. And I mean, and then for Lucy, when it comes to all the background artists and seeing the students in that hall that we just saw, how do you, like, how do days like that work? Because we're on location and there's so many people.
I mean, also I would be talking, we talk to the second AD and they'll put forward potential people that might work for the role of background. And, you know, in the contemporary, you know, drama, sometimes they'll send people in, and sometimes you'll look and you'll be like, no, but the majority of the time they might be getting background from the area that you're shooting in. They probably are students,
right?
You know, that type of thing. So you're just kind of looking for a variety that will maybe just say different. Just give a, you know, you want diversity, you want to see maybe there's different backgrounds. And I think really you just want them to create an atmosphere around the main cast, but not to overshadow.
Right.
You know, it's just, you don't want people to stand out too much, but also you want them to give that fit, that you want them to feel authentic.
And then for scenes like that, do the costume department and hair and makeup work closely to then go, oh, this is what they're going to be wearing. When it's that many people, do you know the costume before you're doing the hair and makeup, or is it just kind of?
I mean, often we'll get them to send in pictures. It's been different with the pandemic. We'll get them to see pictures of what their stuff they've got, and then I always have like a huge selection of racks of stuff that are kind of good, you know, to put people in, and we usually change out stuff because sometimes they might wear two or three changes a day. But yeah, it's all got to kind of fit in the main sort of world of our Oxford stuff. So
yeah,
you know, we wanted our principals, like Heather and all the people around them, to all kind of work together.
Yeah,
so they're together from the same place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also trying to, like, you know, make it look authentic. Being 47 and all the kids are supposed to be like 20, so you have to kind of like think, what would they wear, you know? But that's why I have young people helping me.
Yes, well, exactly. And that's, it's a team, isn't it? Like, obviously you two are head of the departments, but then you have a team around you, and that makes a lot of sense that then you would have a team that is diverse in lots of different ways, including age, that then you can go, is this cool, like, am I on the right track?
And also sometimes,
you know, when it's all right that they like it.
Yeah.
And you know, you have, the thing is, you also have people that you trust, like you have dailies that will come in and help with all the background. And if anyone's worried or they've got a problem, they'll just send you a pitch and just say, what do you think about this guy? You know, it'll be that's the kind of questions that you get. And I'll be, go and ask Claire if we can have a hat.
Yeah.
That'd be a problem, I'll say. And then, you've got a quick hat and a big scar.
Yeah,
but that was what was so lovely too, is how well you both work together. I mean, you've known each other for years, but that's You know, there's no kind of substitute for that. And as an actor, to know that I can go into costume and talk freely about like what's happening in makeup, and just knowing that it's a real team of people behind the camera, but also in costume and hair and makeup, particularly as an actor, it's such a special bond. There's so much trust there.
A lot about things, Claire, wouldn't we? We would always discuss.
We spend a lot of time
about what colours are you using, and how you know, what ideas have you got for this? And sometimes, you know, and I could quite freely, as Claire would say to me, I'd be like, "Oh, I hadn't seen it like that," and then she'll say, "Oh," and I'll be, "Oh, okay, yeah, that." Or I might say, "I was going to do this," and you can help to kind of influence one another in that way.
Yeah.
Or just because
we have worked together, we've sort of grown up in the industry together, I feel like. We've done so many jobs together. We've got such a shorthand. And, you know, we just, you know, chat all the time. I think it is really important. It's like, you've got to be like a design team. You know, it's how it looks on the set, how hair and makeup work and costumes. It has to be together.
I think it's one of those things that we trust each other. So, for instance, like often, you know, with Claire, with costume designing, you can't be on set all the time because you're always slightly more ahead, and I might be on set. And if I saw something, I'd think, oh, Claire might not be keen about that. I would feel like I could say to Claire, is this what you know, this is what's happening? And you would say either yes or no. But I think it's nice to be able to be honest like that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Every time I get a job, I always ask who's going to be makeup, who's the production designer. Like, those are the questions I ask in the interview at the beginning, because it's like, you know, who are going to be your, like, your mates? And your kind of design team mates, and you know, to get you through the job.
Yeah, totally. And it's what I love about being on set. There's no substitute for that, of feeling like you are part of this team. And especially when we were filming this, it was during the pandemic, and so everything was a bit different for everybody. So I feel like we relied on each other more than ever.
Well, we were the only people we got to see.
I know. We were like in the dark lockdown. There was no shops open. There was nothing.
Oh,
we were our own friends.
Yeah, and also we just, things would have just been different if we hadn't have had COVID. We would have probably gone over to the States. We would have been able to meet people ahead of time, had proper fittings. It would have been, you know, less stressful than, you know, praying that you've had this wig made that's going to fit.
Yeah.
Or they're going to like it. Like, do you like it? Because we've got about 12 hours till we have to film on it.
I remember when you got the wig, and it was like, you were like, oh my God, I'm going to cry. It's so beautiful. It was beautiful. It's such a good wig.
Well, it's see it on the block, when you pick it up and you see it on the block and you can see someone's face underneath it, that you can imagine their face.
Yeah.
When you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. But I mean, just what I liked and what someone else liked might be different though.
Totally. Yeah, here it is. It has to be this. Kunal Nayar was just on screen in the carpet factory.
He's got a pink roller carpet on his back as I'm watching. We're just going around a corner.
I'm going to pause mine because I am ahead.
Okay. He's carrying a roller carpet.
Yeah, you see, I'm beyond the roller carpet. Right, I'm going to pause mine. I'm on Elizabeth now.
Oh. Right, he's putting it in a van. Where are you, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I'm in the Oxford Square looking at my phone.
You're walking across with Heather.
Okay, perfect. So right, God, so we're
Oxford
about
was so stunning, wasn't it?
It was so stunning and so cold.
But it was January and you were in a very thin dress.
Well, and I'm used to working in LA before this show, and it was a rude awakening.
Yeah.
But also, we can't say, the reason why we chose this dress for this bit is for something that's coming up in a later episode. And
yes,
that's why we chose that. Yeah.
Well, you can say those things.
Each job goes on a version. But each job goes each dress goes on its own kind of thing, because later on, we need you in that dress for something that happens in episode 5.
Yes, Yes, I loved all my dresses, and I think it was a, you know, you also don't want to, I wouldn't want to dress in like ski gear because the actor is going to be in this for 12 hours rather than because the character is going to be in this for 10 minutes as she walks across the quad, you know, so it's good. I would, and I mean, I had heat pads all over me. You had so many thermals for me. I was very well looked after. but it was amazing to be at Oxford, wasn't it? And just like, you know,
so in our wardrobe room was the William Morris room. It was like, I've never had a posher William Morris room. It had his like pipe and his glasses, and then it was all decorated in William Morris wallpaper and fabrics and stuff. And I was just like, I think I'm in heaven. I was like, I've never been in such a beautiful room. It's like, oh, it's so pretty and nice. And we were just like kind of there because the pandemic was on. We just could have anywhere. It was great. It was
amazing.
I think we got told to stay in a room that day, didn't we? And watch the monitor from our iPads. And we were like, okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine. Window.
Yeah, well, and it's such a great contrast to where Natalie is now in the scene. She's gone into her back to her office to, you know, kind of do some sneaky suspicious business, and you know, it's all very glass, lots of glass, lots of gray, lots of, you know, in the city. Yes. So then how do you start to look at a scene like this or a setting like this? Because we're not here for very long. So you kind of have to establish where she works. This is an important place. Maybe it was a bit oppressive. Where do you start designing something like this?
I think for me, it's very corporate. It's just, it's almost they. I was, you know, I would imagine them how they're dressed in, you know, skirts. They, you know, it's quite conformist, and everyone just looks neat, tidy. I mean, obviously, Natalie, we've had this thing where she come back from being in prison, and then she walks into the house in her wedding dress, and then the next time we see her, she's diving under a bed. But so we had to then just imagine what we'd done if we'd just taken the hair out. What would she have done? Because she's just obviously had a quick shower and got changed, and so she looks pretty. For this, she needs to look, you know, tired, not really made up, just hair stripped back. And I'm imagining how she would have been looking for work, a much stripped back, you know, quite a down version of herself.
Same that, because she's got her cozy cardigan on and she's just tucked her normal work coat over the top, which is quite smart, but underneath she's kind of not scruffy, but also again, that costume has to go somewhere else, so it you know, it has to be practical and things that are coming up, so it has to work with all of the stuff that's upcoming in that costume. But yeah, she's got that kind of like vulnerable sort of cozy cardigan feel underneath, but then her normal coat just chucked over the top, which is kind of smartish.
I quite like this scene with her as well. She looks kind of ruthless, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
You're like,
she's got business on her mind.
Yeah, she does.
You're just like, whoa, okay. Like, she's just together.
Yeah.
What I love is that you suspect them all at different stages.
Yeah, totally.
It's hard, isn't it? Because you're not looking at it with fresh eyes because you know.
Yeah.
If I didn't know this, I would be... You know the stages, so it would have more, you know, it's having more implications and stuff. But.
Yeah. Well, and it's different. Talking kind of toward that is that, you know, this all has to track, and it's very specific in terms of, you know, what each scene is doing. And it feels like a show where nothing is just... without meaning and as filler, you know, like this is Apple. They don't have to guess, you know, they can have it as long or as short as they want per episode. And there's only 8 days that this is, you know, supposedly set over. And we shot it so crazy out of order. How difficult was that to try and keep note of going, okay, so yeah, we have to have it so that she just threw her hair up because she's just dived under the bed. You know, but there may be 5 months between shooting each one.
It was difficult. I think it was probably difficult for It's a bit like you guys as well, to get your head into.
Yeah, it was different.
Where you were, and there was the big gap because you'd started filming, and then there was a big gap.
Yeah.
You just, you know, thank goodness for iPhone cameras and continuity notes. And you have to, because you honestly think, oh, I'll remember, but you have to write everything down, because actually you don't.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things. Yeah. And also there's lots of little nuances that happen as you go along the way. And later on when things change, you have to sort of be in your head like, oh, is that, it could be like for stunts or something, they'll be doing a couple of stunts. And if someone's looking different, you just have to go, which, where are we at? Has that bit happened yet? Has that bit happened? Oh no, it's after that bit, or it's before that bit. There's quite a lot of jumping around.
But a lot of stuff's shot out of order, and everyone, you just have to do like a big plan, don't you? And for us, it's like, this costume will take you from scene 12 to scene 36. And then you have to realise what's going to happen in there. Are there any stunts? How many of each one costume? We had just loads. I remember at the beginning, because we just didn't really know, like, you know, how many stunts, like, people are going to be in things. So you just get loads of everything. So you just have many repeats. So you can shoot it over. I mean, we shot it over a year, didn't we?
Yeah, mad. Yeah. Like, yeah,
I mean, the wedding especially was a year apart. In the house to actually walking down the aisle was like a year apart. So,
oh my god!
And also, yeah, it's true, because if somebody looks different on one day to another day, but you're doing stunts, so you end up having different looks for each. But it's, yeah, there's a lots of like stunt wigs and double wigs, and also you have a picture double and a stunt double. So stunt double, it might be flashing past the camera, so you want to have the right color hair and sort of length, but it could be like an acrylic wig. It's not quite as important because it's just a shape. But then if you've got a picture double and they're actually doubling, so you believe it's, say it's you, we believe it's you.
Yeah, it's so many things that go into it, you know, because it's like hearing you speak about the design and maybe more the artistic side of things, where it's like, how do you design the look and the character and work together to do that? But then there's also the side that goes, you're managing a whole team of people, and then you're going, okay, practically, how do we, you know, how many wigs do we need? It's very kind of left brain and right brain. And then you're doing budgets of, and you have to, you know, say why you need different things in your budget. And do you find that, you know, if you were going to give advice to somebody that wanted to go into hair and makeup or wanted to go into costume in the film industry, would you say you need kind of 50-50 of each, or do you need the creative because you can learn the other stuff? Or
I would say you need creative, especially it's different in the UK to America, because we do both.
Yes,
so we do hair and makeup. And I think, you know, for instance, for you, Elizabeth, and Kunal and Uma, it was different because you just sat in my chair.
Yeah.
And you didn't
move.
Go off. Didn't move. And you know, I remember when I was having the Zoom with Uma, and she was like, we were chatting, and she said, oh, who's gonna do my hair? And I said, oh, I am. And she was like, oh.
It just doesn't happen. I mean, it's the first time that's happened for me.
Yeah, and luckily we were on, I could see her face, and I just said, oh, is that going to be okay? And she's like, yeah, it just seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
But actually, it was great, because you can wrap the hair, do the makeup, then, you know, so in actual fact, it ends up being like a 45-minute call.
Yeah,
we had quite a little vibe going, didn't we? Get a costume on, then we do, you do makeup, and we'd go back between us.
And it was,
and so that was really in the end.
I think so. And also, it's, yeah, I think so. But I think for me, you know, if say if you're in a state and you're going to choose to do either hair or makeup, obviously you just want to find the best training that you can get, I think, for, you know, to in that area. And I think the other side of things you just learn because you have to learn. You know, you get given a budget, you just have to learn to work within it. That's just how it is. And you know, you learn continuity, all those other things just come together. But I think naturally you have to have those core skills. So for instance, you know, I trained as a hairdresser, then I worked in a hairdresser's, and then I went and worked at the BBC. But so you have to have that, you know, that ability, you have to have those skills in your fingertips really as well. And everything else, I think I just, because I don't remember actually physically learning all the other stuff, but it, I think you just pick it up when you're watching somebody else, or you might ask somebody, oh, what are you doing? You know, because I have people all the time saying, oh, just get this. And I say, I haven't got the budget. And they will be like, you know, on your team, well, what's, you know, and you remember, what's the budget? And you say, well, you have to work within a certain amount of money. You can't, it's not just an endless pit of money that you can go, oh,
spend it.
You know, you have to remember, it's like it's a business at the end of the day.
Yeah,
you can't go over your budget. It's really important.
And you have to spend in a certain, you know, you have to be aware of claiming your value, all of those things. And you know, you just don't go over budget.
Yeah,
you have to be really mindful of that. It's really important, because if you go over budget, then then the person who's in charge of the money has got a problem that they're not foreseeing, because they think you're going to stick within your budget. So I wouldn't worry about any of that stuff. You'll learn about that later on. But it's just get into the training really, and just watch loads of films and TV shows and get inspiration from that, and see, you know, start to sort of study characters, and you can see how stories move along. You can see progression in characters. That's kind of an interesting way to learn, I think, as well.
Yeah. And so then once you've kind of find the training, do you then tend to just sort of meet people through that are, you know, if you want to go into film, there may be a teacher there that knows somebody that could get you on as a day person? Or
I don't know how it is for Christian, but for me, I actually do tutor at a makeup academy at Delamar at Ealing Studios, so I meet lots of trainees that way, because just go into a room and, you know, so you get to meet people like that, or people recommend people to you, you know, your friends, or often they'll just say, oh, I've just worked with someone, they were great, and then you try and get them out and give, you know, and that's how it is really. And I think it's you know, in the beginning stages, it's, you know, when you're starting out, there's probably not tons of makeup that you're doing, but you know you just want to be punctual, punctual, turn up on time. Don't get lost.
Don't lose receipts. Exactly. I mean, for costume, I went to the art college. I went to the tutors were all kind of, they were working costume designers, and they would take you on to be a trainee, and that's how I started. And then again, you just kind of, I suppose, you just like be sort of as nice as you can, I suppose. And like, I could drive, and I ended up driving around and picking everybody up and driving to Pinewood Studios, and that was a really good elbowing for me, and I ended up carrying on work, because I always say work breeds work. So if you do one job with somebody, it snowballs to something else. You know, it might not be well paid, like my first job was 30 quid a week, it used to cost me 40 quid a week in petrol, but you know, from that I carried on working. And I literally, you know, never driven in London before. I had a compass, there was no sat nav, had a compass on the front of my dashboard.
Oh my god, a compass!
A compass, like a ball, compass ball.
Oh my god.
So I knew roughly which way I was going. I was come up north, I'd never kind of driven in London before. I was driving my mum's old Maestro, it was horrendous. And, you know, I had to pick up everybody in the department and drive us to Palmer Studios every day.
Oh, my God. I'd be sweating bullets.
It was really scary. But it was, you know, I've never, that was when I was still at art college. So I must have been like 20. And I've never stopped working since then. And I, you know, and because I can sew, that's always a good way in for costume. And so from that, I've done every single job in the department to designer. And now I've been designing for, I don't know, maybe 20 years. But before then, I did every job in the department. And, yeah, doing the budgets and, you know, all of that stuff. Being on set, I've done standby.
That's so brilliant.
So, yeah, just worked your way up. But, yeah, I think really... just don't be annoying.
Yeah. Don't be annoying. Be on time.
Make cups of tea. Drive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's so good to hear because you go, those things are pretty simple, you know, of like, be on time, be kind, be useful. And yeah. also don't, I think, you know, when you're starting out in anything, you can kind of look to somebody that's been doing it longer and go, oh, how come I'm not there yet? Or I'll never get there. Or that feels so far away. Or, and really it does just take time. Like everybody on a film set, it's an apprenticeship, really. Like everybody you see yeah. has put the hours in, especially yeah. in the crew. Like, of course there are going to be actors that just got plucked off the street potentially. But even then it's like you know, it's a baptism of fire if you've not been on set before as an actor. And it's just remembering those things, isn't it? Like there's no small jobs. There's nothing that doesn't have integrity right. because everything builds.
And everything yeah. I think is just like, you have to be, I think it's being flexible as well, because every time you work with someone else, they'll work in a different way.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure you've never been made up the same way or, yeah. you know, all of everyone has a different, so I think to be flexible and you can glean bits from other people as you go along. And I think also just, you know, if you're, sometimes it might feel like, oh, I'm just making tea, but that's actually a really important job.
Yeah.
It's actually, yeah, it is.
It's, you know, or checking people have got water and things like that. It's, yeah. it's like a really important thing. So if somebody's on set and they can't get off set, you know, just showing that kind of consideration goes a long way, because that's yeah. what you're looking for, really.
You want to say,
yeah, you want to have people,
you know,
around.
You want to have them around yeah. all the time. You're like, I really like that person.
Yeah.
They're really kind. Keep... And then they just get to do more and more each job.
I think so. And if they keep an eye on the truck and they look after the truck and everybody on the truck, that goes such a long way, because that's, you know, that means that all the team are being cared for.
Yeah.
And also comparing yourself, I always just think comparison, what is that saying? It's like comparison is the theft of joy. And I yeah. just feel like you should always just try and, like, each job's just such a small thing that they, what I love about being freelance, and probably what some people would hate as well, is that there's always an end date to it. It yeah. doesn't last for very long. So just try and enjoy the moment and being there, and like try and love what you're doing for that thing. And don't compare yourself to other people, and don't make the choices, whatever. Just try and be happy in the moment. You know, people, I've seen people arguing about money and all of these, that's, you know, and having a horrible time, but it's, that's all brought on themselves. If you just sort of like try and enjoy yourself in your own thing, then that's it's a really nice way to work and sort of earn a living, really, as long as you're not, you don't wear yourself out, like with FOMO.
I was gonna say, I think the hard thing I think the hardest thing probably when you're starting off in the industry, and I don't know about in the States how the hours are there, but it is a bit of a shock to the system if you're not used to doing the hours, just yeah. the physicality of getting up. Your alarm clock might go off at 4 a.m, you know, and then you have the stress of trying to, I mean, even now after all these years, you know, you think, thank goodness, I've got Waze now, not an A to Z, but even so, you know, I do think, oh, I've become so reliant on an app to get me to work.
I know.
You know, what if the phone just stopped working?
I know. We'd get our compasses out. I'd be like, Claire, send me a compass.
Well, now I'm there. I've got like the knowledge of London, black hub knowledge, yeah. because I know.
So I appreciate that. It's a very, you know, and it does come stamina. You know, you build your stamina up and all of those sorts of things. So I think that is, you know, people get absolutely exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tiring.
Yeah. But I suppose then it's the creative that keeps the fuel in your tank, that you go,
yeah,
but I love this and this lights me up in a way. And it's, there's a passion there that makes you go, I love my job, when it's like 2 a.m. yeah. and it's freezing and raining and you've still got 4 scenes to go. You're like, I love my job.
I know you do. I mean, and some days just fly. Some
yeah.
days,
yeah.
I mean, actually, on suspicion, I used to think, oh, how can it be? You know, how can it nearly be the end of the day? I've got so much to do.
Amazing.
I used to always feel like I could never go. And then sometimes you do. You have a day at work, and there's not so many changes, or it's a bit quieter, which is something that on those busy days you think, oh, if I just had 5 minutes. But what happens then is, sometimes you'll go, oh, you know, you're so used to being doing a lot, the day goes really slowly, so sometimes I think being busy is probably better.
Yeah,
you must have that, Elizabeth, doing one scene in the morning and then one scene in the evening. It's and you've got a downtime in the day. You know, you're quite a proactive person, but I could imagine that people just want to snooze all the time.
Oh, totally, yeah. Just while they're on screen, well, actually, now it's Natalie and Vanessa.
Thank you.
But can we at least on mine, can we talk about, like, the NCA and the world of Noah Emmerich and Angel Colby and, like, Vanessa, like, their whole relationship? Like, how did you differentiate this world? Because we've spoken about, like, the New York Catherine Newman, the suspects, but then how did you approach these two?
Well, I mean, for me, because I came onto this job, so some of this had already been carved out.
Gosh, yeah.
So I actually think there was a little bit of a discrepancy about Noah and that maybe his hair should have been longer, but that was all, anyway, that sort of happened prior. I think with him, I think Chris's idea for him was he was kind of a bit rough and ready.
Yeah.
You know, he just came in. He's probably got that kind of arrogance that he's like, oh God, these Brits.
Yeah.
You know, and I think with Angel, who's just such, she's lovely. She's such a great person to have around.
I mean, they both she are, just aren't they? What a dream team.
Yeah, really lovely. Yeah, so lovely. She, but, you know, there was no vanity or airs with her. She just wanted to look like, I'm just here to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was just, she just, and we talked about it at the beginning, she just said, I would just do my hair like this. I would just, this, if it was me and I was this person, I would just want my hair back. I don't want to think about it. And sometimes you'll notice that her hair might just look a little bit, if she's been there all night, it starts to look a bit fluffier and, you know, a little bit. And she, Cheryl was looking after her, and Cheryl was really good at plotting that storyline with her. And so she would just make it, she'd pull it out a bit more and make it look a bit more disheveled if she'd been there overnight.
Yeah, those are the details that you laugh. Because you watch it.
I don't know whether people will notice. So, yeah, you sort of might not notice it, but it's all, there is all those little things where, okay, she's, you know, like Cheryl says, she stayed there overnight, so we should do this. And, like, yeah, that's, you know, that's great. So it's, but they are all these little things where, I guess it's the same with you, Claire, like people might become untucked or a bit disheveled, but it's not like a jump, it's just a little progression that happens to lead you on to another day.
Yeah. And I think costume wise, it's sort of a kind of technical world, and it's very corporate suits and that kind of thing. You imagine that they have lockers there, that they are going to stay there, that they keep shirts and that kind of thing there at work, so they can get changed, because they're obviously like in it for the long haul to kind of work through this. They don't go home. Once they're there. We had them there a few nights in a row, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we were there for like 5 or 6. I think also from our point of view, it'd be just like no one really stands out there. They're just bodies, aren't they, in the background? It's that kind of everything's working together, so nothing is jarring. It's just
So it was again, colours wise, it was all navies, greys, and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
quite sort of cool.
You're going to see somebody come along a minute in a bright red jumper and pick up
the stick.
Yeah. Remember that person? move on.
Oh, now, so we've got Tom Rhys-Harris has just popped on the screen.
Yes, he has.
Jumping around.
Such an amazing, I forgot that he wasn't in every episode. And then when I watched this, I was know. Like, oh my gosh, there he is.
Yeah,
because
he just arrived, isn't he?
Yes. Oh my gosh, and then that's the end. Yes, well, Tom Rhys-Harris' character will become very important. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that just flew by. Just quickly to add what you were saying, Lucy, is I don't think that people necessarily notice, like, and you, Claire, with like if something's a bit untucked or if there's a bit of fuzz in hair or if it's like a bit messy, but you just feel it. And I think that's for me when the passion and the artistic side of it, that you really care about that, what, you know, and Cheryl being like, mm-hmm. I'm making a note, I want that little bit of like hair to not be perfect, but then also marrying that to, you then have to keep that up for what turned into a year of filming and make sure the continuity is right, and you know, you have to have,
and then they'll do pickups, they'll do a pickup.
And also hair grows Lisa, yeah. When you do it, I can't bear it. That's why it's supposed to be the thing with a wig. Wigs don't grow.
Yeah.
From that wedding, we had some people, I don't know, one of the guests at the wedding who was in the house came back after lockdown. We couldn't do her dress up.
Oh my gosh. We had
like 20 people, all these direct continuity. And I was like, we need to get accurate selfies of them today. And people had completely changed their hair.
But
you see them outside
down in lockdown.
That you see them either side of the wedding, and then
you're like, don't look too close at that.
Yeah. I mean, my body completely changed. Just like we had, how, like 5 months off during one of the most stressful times on the planet.
When everyone just stayed in and ate.
Exactly.
Nobody could go to the gym or do anything.
People either got
fat or they lost lots of weight, which is what we had both of. It was one or the other.
Yeah, nobody stayed the same. That would just be too boring. I asked on my Instagram just for a couple of questions, because this format used to be live, and so at this point people would kind of come in. So I would love for that kind of still to be a part of it. So you know, just quickly, oh my gosh, I mean, so many questions came in for you both. I feel like we've sort of answered a couple of, here's one that we didn't. Taylor asks, how much do you work with the writers when making a look come together?
I mean, personally, I always chat with the writers. Depends how involved the writers are. Sometimes you never see them, but someone like Rob, who was there all the time, we would talk to them, and also his team, about the whole timeline of the show is really, really important. I used to go to the timeline wall all the time to kind of get in my head where everything was going to go at the beginning. So I talked to the writers and directors and obviously the artists themselves as well, and then like hair and makeup.
Yeah, because I think also Rob was an exec, I think, as well. When writers are exec, they're much more involved. And also sometimes you are working on episodes and the last episodes haven't been written.
Right, so that was another question we had.
You have to speak ahead and say, and they'll be like, oh, we might do this in 8. And you'd like, might or will?
Right.
Because, I mean, I've shot scenes from scripts. I've had to shoot odd scenes from episodes that haven't been written before other episodes, and they say, oh yeah, by the way, they're probably going to have a fight at the end of that episode, to just put a bruise on them for this. And you go like, where? Like, what sort of fight?
Well, that's really interesting, because another question we got was from Hannah, saying how much you know about the full character arcs before developing their look. So it varies, I guess, right?
You have to have a beginning point and an end point. And then you can plot your character arc, and you try and get from A to B, you know, make that a visual journey.
Like you say, sometimes you don't know, like they're not written. Luckily this one we knew we had the 8 episodes. I mean, they weren't locked in, but we could have a version of them that we read at the beginning, which was really good. But they were so lovely to read that it was like, oh my god, what's gonna happen next?
So exciting. Oh my gosh, thank you so much. This was, I feel inspired, and I feel like there's so many amazing takeaways that obviously relate to hair and makeup and costume and the film industry in general, but I also just to kind of lie for, if you got a passion and you want to follow it, of things like, don't, you know, I'm just really going to take away of the, like, don't compare yourself, that everybody's kind of on their own path, and if all you do is turn up on time and notice if people need things, make a cup of tea, then you're actually doing brilliantly.
It's a really important it's a really important part of the team, like everyone. And
kind,
also you'll find you can come into the industry and just be you know, some people might go, I only want to do period work, or some people like contemporary, or, you know, there's all different, there's so many different areas as well. Yeah. You know, you can do, you know, like light entertainment shows, you know, and every like area of costume makeup, it's got its own really high levels of skills, you know, attached to all of them. It's just whether I like working with a script. So I like having a narrative and I like that character building as well as doing the makeup. But you know, if your passion is just like fashion makeup or that really high glam makeup, then there's another area that you can excel in that way.
Yeah And it's worth trying lots of different things, like try loads of different kinds of TV and film, or you might like theater. You know, I've had people who've worked, and then we've had to do loads of breaking down, which is when you distress all the costumes and they're like, oh my god, I want to be a breakdown artist, like I just love doing this.
Yeah.
And that's what they've then gone to pursue afterwards, like the, you know, the textile courses or whatever, and that's, they're like, I just want to be a breakdown artist because I want to learn more about this. But you know, when you come and trainee, you just do everything, which I think is nice. You learn to know what kind of hats you want to wear, you know.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. You're both very busy people, so I really appreciate that. And I miss you. I hope that I
miss you too.
See each other soon. Thank you.
Easy. Bye. Thank you.
Brought the microphone with me. Thank you for watching. Thank you so much to Claire and Lucy. Aren't they just amazing? Imagine going to work every day and them being there and just taking such great care of you. Gosh, I just loved how we were just chatting away after. I just feel like there's so much in there that is relevant to life and also very industry specific. It's funny, the more specific you are, sometimes the more universal the advice becomes. Love that. I hope you got something from that. I hope there was little tidbits you'll take away that'll perhaps make your journey and your day a little bit easier or smoother or more challenging, because you know we love a challenge as well. Thank you so much for watching along the Watch Along episode 3 Suspicion Edition, or Suspicion Edition episode 3. One day, probably by episode 8, I will get all this smooth. God, I feel like I'm on some kind of radio show, trying to make the sound quality as good as possible. We'll see how I do. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. I hope that you loved that episode 4 up next.